Chapter 5 Puddleglum. Jill was asleep. Ever since the Owl's Parliament began, she'd been yawning terribly, and now she'd dropped off. She was not at all pleased at being waked again, and at finding herself lying on bare boards in a dusty belfry sort of place, completely dark and almost completely full of owls. She was even less pleased when she heard that they had to set off for somewhere else, and not apparently for bed, on the owl's back. "Oh, come on, pull buck up," said Scrub's voice. "After all, it is an adventure." "I'm sick of adventures," said Jill crossly. She did, however, consent to climb onto Glimfeather's back, and was thoroughly waked up for a while by the unexpected coldness of the air when he flew out with her into the night. The moon had disappeared, and there were no stars. Far behind her, she could see a single lighted window well above the ground, doubtless in one of the towers of Caer Paravel. It made her long to be back in that delightful bedroom, snug in bed, watching the firelight on the walls. She put her hands under her cloak and wrapped it tightly round her. It was uncanny to hear two voices in the dark air a little distance away. Scrub and his owl were talking to one another. "He doesn't sound tired," thought Jill. She did not realise that he'd been on great adventures in that world before, and that the Narnian air was bringing back to him a strength he had won when he sailed the eastern seas with King Caspian. Jill had to pinch herself to keep awake, for she knew that if she dozed on Glimfeather's back, she would probably fall off. When, at last, the two owls ended their flight, she climbed stiffly off Glimfeather and found herself on flat ground. A chilly wind was blowing, and they appeared to be in a place without trees. "Too-woo, too-woo," Glimfeather was calling. "Wake up, Puddleglum, wake up. It is on the lion's business." For a long time there was no reply. Then a long way off, a dim light appeared and began to come nearer. With it came a voice.
"Owls ahoy," it said. "What is it? Is the king dead? Has an enemy landed in Narnia? Is it a flood or dragons?"
When the light reached them, it turned out to be that of a large lantern. Jill could see very little of the person who held it. He seemed to be all legs and arms. The owls were talking to him, explaining everything, but she was too tired to listen. She tried to wake herself up a bit when she realised that they were saying goodbye to her, but she could never afterwards remember much except that sooner or later she and Scrub were stooping to enter a low doorway, and then, oh, thank heavens, were lying down on something soft and warm, and a voice was saying,
"There you are, best we can do. You'll lie cold and hard. Damp, too, I shouldn't wonder. Won't sleep a wink, most likely. Even if there isn't a thunderstorm or a flood, or the wigwam didn't fall down on the top of us all as I've known them do. Must make the best of it." But she was fast asleep before the voice had ended.
When the children woke late the next morning, they found that they were lying very dry and warm on beds of straw in a dark place. A triangular opening let in the daylight.
"Where on earth are we?" asked Jill.
"In the wigwam of a marsh wiggle," said Eustace.
"A what?"
"A marsh wiggle. Don't ask me what it is, I couldn't see it last night. I'm getting up. Let's go and look for it."
"How beastly one feels after sleeping in one's clothes," said Jill, sitting up.
"I was just thinking how nice it was not to have to dress," said Eustace.
"Or wash either, I suppose," said Jill scornfully. But Scrub had already got up, yawned, shaken himself, and crawled out of the wigwam. Jill did the same. What they found outside was quite unlike the bit of Narnia they had seen on the day before. They were on a great flat plain, which was cut into countless little islands by countless channels of water. The islands were covered with coarse grass and bordered with reeds and rushes. Sometimes there were beds of rushes about an acre in extent. Clouds of birds were constantly alighting in them and rising from them again. Ducks, snipe, bitterns, herons. Many wigwams, like that in which they had passed the night, could be seen dotted about, but all at a good distance from one another, for marshwiggles are people who like privacy. Except for the fringe of the forest several miles to the south and west of them, there was not a tree in sight. Eastward, the flat marsh stretched to low sandhills on the horizon, and you could tell by the salt tang in the wind which blew from that direction that the sea lay over there. To the north, there were low, pale-coloured hills, in places bastioned with rock. The rest was all flat marsh. It would have been a depressing place on a wet evening. Seen under a morning sun, with a fresh wind blowing, and the air filled with the crying of birds, there was something fine and fresh and clean about its loneliness. The children felt their spirits rise. "Where has the thingummy got to, I wonder," said Jill. "The marshwiggle," said Scrub, as if he were rather proud of knowing the word. "I expect, oh, hello, that must be him." And then they both saw him, sitting with his back to them, fishing, about 50 yards away. He'd been hard to see at first, because he was nearly the same colour as the marsh, and because he sat so still. "I suppose we'd better go and speak to him," said Jill. Scrub nodded. They both felt a little nervous. As they drew nearer, the figure turned its head and showed them a long, thin face with rather sunken cheeks, a tightly shut mouth, a sharp nose, and no beard. He was wearing a high, pointed hat like a steeple, with an enormously wide, flat brim. The hair, if it could be called hair, which hung over his large ears, was greeny-grey, and each lock was flat rather than round, so that they were like tiny reeds. His expression was solemn, his complexion muddy, and you could see at once that he took a serious view of life.
"Good morning, guests," he said. "Though when I say good, I don't mean it won't probably turn to rain, or it might be snow or fog or thunder. You didn't get any sleep, I dare say."
"Yes, we did, though," said Jill. "We had a lovely night."
"Ah," said the marshwiggle, shaking his head, "I see you're making the best of a bad job. That's right. You've been well brought up, you have. You've learnt to put a good face on things."
"Please, we don't know your name," said Scrub.
"Puddleglum's my name, but it doesn't matter if you forget it. I can always tell you again."
The children sat down on each side of him. They now saw that he had very long legs and arms, so that although his body was not much bigger than a dwarf's, he would be taller than most men when he stood up. The fingers of his hands were webbed like a frog's, and so were his bare feet, which dangled in the muddy water. He was dressed in earth-coloured clothes that hung loose about him.
"I'm trying to catch a few eels to make an eel stew for our dinner," said Puddleglum. "Though you shouldn't wonder if I didn't get any, and you won't like them much if I do."
"Why not?" asked Scrub.
"Why, it's not in reason that you should like our sort of victuals, though I've no doubt you'll put a bold face on it. All the same, while I am a-catching of them, if you two could try to light the fire, there's no harm in trying. The wood's behind the wigwam. It may be wet. You could light it inside the wigwam, and then we'd get all the smoke in our eyes, or you could light it outside, and then the rain would come and put it out. Here's my tinder box. You won't know how to use it, I expect."
But Scrub had learnt that sort of thing on his last adventure. The children ran back together to the wigwam, found the wood, which was perfectly dry, and succeeded in lighting a fire with rather less than the usual difficulty. Then Scrub sat and took care of it while Jill went and had some sort of wash, not a very nice one, in the nearest channel. After that, she saw to the fire, and he had a wash. Both felt a good deal fresher, but very hungry. Presently the marshwiggle joined them. In spite of his expectation of catching no eels, he had a dozen or so, which he had already skinned and cleaned. He put a big pot on, mended the fire, and lit his pipe. Marshwiggles smoke a very strange, heavy sort of tobacco. Some people say they mix it with mud. And the children noticed the smoke from Puddleglum's pipe hardly rose in the air at all. It trickled out of the bowl, and downwards, and drifted along the ground like a mist. It was very black, and set Scrub coughing.
No, said Puddleglum. Those eels will take a mortal long time to cook, and either of you might faint with hunger before they're done.
I knew a little girl, but I better not tell you that story. It might lower your spirits, and that's a thing I never do.
So to keep your minds off your hunger, we may as well talk about our plans.
Yes, do let's, said Jill. Can you help us to find Prince Rillian?
The Marshwiggle sucked in his cheeks till they were hollower than you would have thought possible.
Well, don't know that you call it a help, he said. Don't know that anyone could exactly help. It stands to reason we're not likely to get very far on a journey to the north, not this time of year, with the winter coming on so soon and all. And an early winter, too, by the look of things. But you mustn't let that make you downhearted. Very likely what with enemies and mountains and rivers to cross and losing our way, next to nothing to eat and sore feet, we'll hardly notice the weather. And if we don't get far enough to do any good, we may get far enough not to get back in a hurry.
Both children noticed that he said we, not you, and both exclaimed at the same moment, "Are you coming with us?"
"Oh, yes, I'm coming, of course. Might as well, you see. Don't suppose we shall ever see the king back in Narnia, now that he's once set off for foreign parts. And he had a nasty cough when he left. And then there's Trumpkin. He's failing fast. And you'll find there'll have been a bad harvest after this terrible dry summer. I shouldn't wonder if some enemy attacked us, mark my words."
"And how shall we start?" said Scrub.
"Well," said the Marshwiggle very slowly, "all the others who ever went looking for Prince Rillian started from that same fountain where the Lord Drinian saw the lady. They went north, mostly, and as none of them ever came back, we can't exactly say how they got on."
"We've got to start by finding a ruined city of giants," said Jill. "Aslan said so."
"Got to start by finding it, have we?" answered Puddleglum. "Not allowed to start by looking for it, I suppose."
"Well, that's what I meant, of course," said Jill.
"And then when we found it..."
"Yes, when," said Puddleglum very dryly. "Doesn't anyone know where it is?" asked Scrub.
"I don't know about anyone," said Puddleglum. "And I won't say I haven't heard of that ruined city. You wouldn't start from the fountain, though. You'd have to go across Ettensmore. That's where the ruined city is, if it's anywhere. But I've been as far in that direction as most people, and I never got to any ruins, so I won't deceive you."
"Where's Ettensmore?" said Scrub.
"Look over there, northward," said Puddleglum, pointing with his pipe.
"You see those hills and bits of cliff? That's the beginning of Ettensmore.
But there's a river between it and us, the River Shribble. No bridges, of course."
"I suppose we can ford it, though," said Scrub.
"Well, it has been forded," admitted the Marshwiggle.
"Perhaps we shall meet people on Ettensmore who can tell us the way," said Jill.
"You're right about meeting people," said Puddleglum.
"But what sort of people live there?" she asked.
"It's not for me to say they aren't all right in their own way," answered Puddleglum. "If you like their way."
"Yes, but what are they?" pressed Jill. "There are so many strange creatures in this country. I mean, are they animals or birds or dwarfs or what?"
The Marshwiggle gave a long whistle. "Phew," he said.
"Don't you know?
I thought the owls had told you. They're giants."
Jill winced. She had never liked giants, even in books, and she had once met one in a nightmare. Then she saw Scrub's face, which had turned rather green, and thought to herself, "I bet he's in a worse funk than I am." That made her feel braver.
"The king told me long ago," said Scrub, "that time when I was with him at sea, that he'd jolly well beaten those giants in war and made them pay him tribute."
"That's true enough," said Puddleglum. "They're at peace with us all right. As long as we stay on our side of the Shribble, they won't do us any harm. Over on their side, on the moor, still there's always a chance. If we don't get near any of them, and if none of them forget themselves, and we're not seen, it's just possible we might get a long way."
"Look here," said Scrub, suddenly losing his temper, as people so easily do when they have been frightened. "I don't believe the whole thing can be half as bad as you're making out, any more than the beds in the wigwam were hard or the wood was wet. I don't think Aslan would ever have sent us if there was so little chance as all that." He quite expected the Marshwiggle to give him an angry reply, but he only said, "Oh, that's the spirit, Scrub. That's the way to talk. Put a good face on it. But we all need to be very careful about our tempers, seeing all the hard times we shall have to go through together. Won't do to quarrel, you know. At any rate, don't begin it too soon. I know these expeditions usually end that way, knifing one another, I shouldn't wonder, before all's done. But the longer we can keep off it—" "Well, if you feel it so hopeless," interrupted Scrub, "I think you'd better stay behind. Pole and I can go on alone, can't we, Pole?" "Shut up and don't be an ass, Scrub," said Jill hastily, terrified lest the Marshwiggle should take him at his word. "Don't you lose heart, Pole," said Puddleglum. "I'm coming, sure and certain. I'm not going to lose an opportunity like this. It would do me good. They all say, I mean the other Wiggles all say, that I'm too flighty. Don't take life seriously enough. They've said it once, they've said it a thousand times. Puddleglum, they've said, you're altogether too full of bobbance and bounce and high spirits. You've got to learn that life isn't all fricasseed frogs and eel pie. You want something to sober you down a bit. We're only saying it for your own good, Puddleglum. That's what they say. Now, a job like this, a journey up north just as winter's beginning, looking for a prince who probably ain't there, by way of a ruined city that no one has ever seen, will be just the thing. If that don't steady a chap, I don't know what will." And he rubbed his big frog-like hands together as if he were talking of going to a party or a pantomime. "And now," he added, "let's see how those eels are getting on." When the meal came, it was delicious, and the children had two large helpings each. At first, the Marshwiggle wouldn't believe that they really liked it, and when they had eaten so much that he had to believe them, he fell back on saying that it would probably disagree with them horribly. "Was food for Wiggles may be poison for humans, I shouldn't wonder," he said. After the meal, they had tea, in tins, as you've seen men having it who are working on the road, and Puddleglum had a good many sips out of a square black bottle. He offered the children some of it, but they thought it very nasty. The rest of the day was spent in preparations for an early start the next morning. Puddleglum, being far the biggest, said he would carry three blankets with a large bit of bacon rolled up inside them. Jill was to carry the remains of the eels, some biscuit, and the tinderbox. Scrub was to carry both his own cloak and Jill's when they didn't want to wear them. Scrub, who had learned some shooting when he sailed to the east under Caspian, had Puddleglum's second-best bow, and Puddleglum had his best one, though he said that what with winds and damp bowstrings and bad light and cold fingers, it was 100 to 1 against either of them hitting anything. He and Scrub both had swords. Scrub had brought the one which had been left out for him in his room at Caer Paravel, but Jill had to be content with her knife. There would have been a quarrel about this, but as soon as they started sparring, the Wiggle rubbed his hands and said, "Ah, there you are. Thought as much. That's what usually happens on adventures." This made them both shut up. All three went to bed early in the wigwam. This time the children really had a rather bad night. That was because Puddleglum, after saying, "You better try for some sleep, you two. Not that I suppose any of us will close an eye tonight," instantly went off into such a loud, continuous snore that when Jill at last got to sleep, she dreamed all night about road drills and waterfalls and being in express trains in tunnels.